Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, welcome back, and it is now or never, and we are going to be try to move forward from the three premises, because as we kind of covered, we need to get into the details of how our government is violating the Constitution. See, we've all been taught that, you know, they have all these powers, when actually we have a government that has enumerated powers, even your state government. And as a matter of fact, let me be clear here, folks. When you go look through your Constitution, as I've noticed in the South Dakota Constitution, that they have this a power granted to them, and I believe this power was granted to them by the federal government, that they needed to establish and incorporate their government. Well, think about this. We're to have, and the design of our government was strictly designed by two sovereigns, the people and the government that the people created, not corporations, not people that have money to basically pull together and create an organization. And so in the Constitution, Article 4 requires that all states and all governments be republican in form. So how is it that we have corporate forms of government? How is that, more importantly, how is that in line with the design of the Constitution? How is that in line with the republican form of government? And more specifically, where did the power come from? Nowhere in the Constitution were the framers delegated any power over corporations. As a matter of fact, corporations and or companies and or businesses were all under the state government, that the state was to regulate them, not incorporate them, not to become like them, not to become corporations. So when we look at the process, getting everybody equally informed and getting everybody to the same understanding of enumerated constitutions and so forth, one of the important, the first and foremost things that have to be done is the definitizing of the Constitution. What's definitizing? It is declaring that only the only constitution that the states recognize as the supreme law of the land is the original, the language of the Constitution ratified by the 13 states, as well as the original language of the amendments. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people have these problems with a few of the progressive amendments. And I am telling you, and if you go, actually, the color-coded Constitution is up on the website. So go look at it, download it, and you'll find that there are two parts of the Constitution within the first seven articles. Article 1, Section 8, the Uniformity Clause, is being violated by the 16th Amendment. I don't highlight that, but I'm just violating what parts of the original Constitution are being violated by new amendments. In other words, they wrote an amendment that made an assumption, or at least didn't create or did not address. So the 16th Amendment did not address the Uniformity Clause. In other words, as soon as they, you know, initiated this personal income tax, they started creating a gradual and progressive income tax where they were charging certain people, punishing certain people that were making more money. Well, the concept of uniformity was ingrained into this Constitution that the government could not be able to pick winners and losers. They couldn't say, okay, because you're more successful, you have to pay more. It was never that way. The requirement that everybody would be treated uniformly, that the burden would be uniform, And so how is it that when they take 5% from one person, or 10%, or 20%, and then 50% or 80% from another? It's not that. Flies in the face of what the framers initiated and how the framers argued the importance that government not be able to decide who wins and who loses. They were to be out of our way. And the reason that they are to tax is to perform the necessary tasks that we have delegated to them. The reason they implemented the progressive amendments was to give themselves power to implement and or initiate and ingrain socialism and those principles of communism in America. So, again, when we start looking at this strategy, we start looking at why it's so important to be able to become concise. Definitizing the Constitution brings everybody to the same understanding of what the Constitution is. There's really no, well, we see it this way. We can't do that. We can't make the side or oblique interpretations. We can't come in at this in a different direction than everybody else. This is why the ratification debates are probably the most important documents that we have in establishing what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional. Because I'm telling you, folks, when you read the ratification debates, you'll clearly understand that the government was not given the power to be able to pick winners. The government was not given the power to be able to treat anybody differently. The concept of equal treatment or equality, equity, those types of things, are especially in the aspects of social justice. And those, I mean, that concept was repugnant to the framers. Now, one of the things that I need to get into, and I want to do this before we actually get back into the strategy and before we get back into the, the content, the Bill of Rights, and refocusing on the petitions and what we have to do and how we need to kind of punch those politicians and our government straight in the face and actually start put them on notice that we know what they're doing and they got to stop, they got to cease, desist, and get things right. Now, the Fifth Amendment, not Article 5, but the Fifth Amendment is an amendment that was asserted that it changed taxation. Now, let me read the Fifth Amendment, and then I'm going to let you kind of ponder on this, and then we'll get into a little bit later on, we'll get into the debates on the Bill of Rights, where Madison and Sherman and the subcommittee within Congress, as they were working on the Bill of Rights, this is where they discussed, the whys, the hows, and so forth. But in those days, they didn't necessarily get into, the same kind of debates like they do with the ratification debates. But the point is there any evidence whatsoever in the dialogue, in the subcommittee, that the intent was to take away the ability for the federal government to actually and legitimately tax? No. And so this is the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. In other words, you can't be in trial for an infamous or, capital type of crime, for murder or what have you, unless a grand jury's indicted you. You know what? They don't even do that anymore for the cost of saving money. Except, and then there's this exception, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall... So the only time they don't have to do this is when you are actually in the service of the military, then they don't need to have a grand jury indictment. So when you're fighting and prosecuting a war, and they want to, you know, charge you for an infamous crime, then they don't need a grand jury. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy. In other words, basically have to go through the same trial twice. Of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. I plead the Fifth. The Fifth Amendment gives you the right to not have to, you know, to bear testimony about yourself, what you did, or what have you. Nor can you be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use. Now, I think this is where they talk about this taxation, but this is in concept of a trial, a person being tried for an infamous crime. So in other words, what they're talking about here, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation, that's really dealing with the forfeiture, private forfeiture of property. You know, when you commit a crime, so nowadays, when somebody commits a crime, they take your house, they take your savings, they take everything from you and your entire family. And your family suffers, even though, you know, they can't prove that what, you know, that house and all these other things you have were a part of that crime. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when you go through the Fifth Amendment, this is all really talking about protections for you when it comes to you being charged with the crime. Especially, you know, you have this right. If they're going to charge with a capital or infamous type of crime, they need to have a presentment of an indictment from a grand jury. They also put in here the exception to that, that if you are in the service of your nation, whether that be in war, militia, or what have you, in the armed forces, then you know that requirement for the grand jury is not required. So in other words, you have this hardcore requirement, or I should say, government has this hardcore requirement to convene a grand jury to indict you prior to any trial, a trial by jury. And so the next step of this, shall a person, you know, the double jeopardy is the next phase of this. Because if you look at the semicolons, that kind of breaks the context of each part of the amendment. And so the next clause, or from the after the next semicolon, is it is about double jeopardy. The next semicolon is that a person cannot be compelled, cannot be forced to bear witness against themselves, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In other words, they can't come and punish you and say, because you did this, we're taking your property. And if they do fine you and they take your property, it shall be taken with just compensation. So in other words, they can't take your property for public use without just compensation. Now, the intent behind this had nothing to do with eminent domain and government's need to be able to take from you. As a matter of fact, eminent domain and the rulings actually came from this. As I look at this, eminent domain is really on thin ice. But when you look at the one part in the, and this was on the 8th of June in 1789, as they were going through and compiling all the different parts of the Bill of Rights that they were kind of, because there were probably a couple hundred different amendments that came in from all the different states of what they wanted in the Bill of Rights. And one of them was this: no person shall be subject, except in cases of impeachment, to more than one punishment or one trial for the same offense, nor shall be compelled to, so this is pretty poorly written, but nor shall be compelled to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law, nor be obliged to relinquish his property where it may be necessary for public use without just compensation. So this right here, I think, was the intent behind eminent domain. The question is, can they come in if you're convicted of a crime and seize all of your property? I have a problem with that. I mean, it's one thing to say that because the Eighth, I think it's the Eighth Amendment. When we look at the Eighth Amendment says excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. In other words, they can't come after you more harshly because you have more than the other person. In other words, if they made the punishment that if you committed these types of crimes, you killed somebody or multiple murders, what have you, then everything you possess, your family, everything, you lose everything. Well, what if somebody has nothing? Then the family doesn't have to suffer? Or the little that's not worth taking, they just... The fact of the matter is what they have done today is they've gone down this path of saying, you know, you have a lot more we can take and we're going to take it from you by this asset forfeiture. Or when they say, well, you use this in the commission of a crime. Well, you wore clothes in the commission of a crime. Did they take your clothes? No. And see, this really starts indicting the intent behind what they're trying to do. They're only looking to give themselves more money. The law enforcement, or I should say, you know, the state, whatever form of government that is punishing you, they're only looking for different ways of being able to come after you and put money or gold in their pockets and take your possessions, auction them off, or what have you. And in corrupt nations, what they do is they'll take your cars, and those in power will be the ones that get to drive your cars and live in your homes. And that is an indictment of a corrupt nation. So anyway, when you look at the Fifth Amendment, show me where there's any language whatsoever that it changes the powers of taxation of government. It doesn't. There's nowhere in there that it even talks about taxation. It does talk about eminent domain. It does talk about asset forfeiture type of thing. I mean, you can kind of see those things there. And the bottom line is, and we kind of talk about this, and I've said this, and this is actually a part of the Bill of Rights, that when a person has to forfeit property, and the concept is that you are to have just reward, I believe that that just compensation must be determined by a jury of their peers. In other words, it can't be left up to a bureaucrat or to the government itself to determine what your compensation is. So I'll give you a case in point. You're living in a town, and you have a pretty nice piece of property right smack dab in the middle of town, and the government comes along and says, I mean, you have a pretty nice piece of property, and on that property you have, you know, some livestock, you have, you know, this beautiful view or what have you, and government comes along and says, we need to take your property. They want to convert it into a park. They want to put a government building on it. Whatever it is they want to do. Then there needs to be, when they do that, they need to form a jury. And then that jury needs to create a, let's just call it a ledger of the value of that home. When we talk about value, there is the monetary value. So how do we create a monetary value in today's real estate? Well, they usually go by comps. They go by, you know, what is the average property? Now, is your property average or is it above average? See, one of the things that kills me, because when you sell your home, they basically try to say, well, the price of your home should be this, because homes just like yours recently had just sold for this. It doesn't matter if you put $250,000 in landscaping and all sorts of other upgrades, that doesn't matter to them. They go by comps. And I am telling you, that is not just. It's one thing if you're having to sell and you agree to sell your property on that type of price because of comps. That's one thing. Because you're now trying to compete for that. But when government comes along, then they have to be just in actually giving you your just compensation. If you actually put $250,000, you know, into the flooring and into this home, it doesn't matter if they're going to use it or not. You should have just compensation for all of the costs and everything you put into that home, not this concept of comps. See, there's a difference. Government is coming and compelling you and taking from you that castle that you have built yourself, something that you had no intention of selling. It's like I said, it is different if you have the intent in selling your property. Then you have to agree or you don't sell it. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to be a willing participant in the transaction. In other words, you have to be willing to say, okay, you know, I realize, because when I sold my home in Southern California, my realtors wanted me to sell it for well over $30,000 under what I ended up selling it for. Why? Because they said, oh, this comps dictate this. And I go, this house is worth more and I'm going to get more money for it. And I sold that house within 1 week, and I sold it the week before Christmas because we put that much money into that house, and we had to leave because of lots of personal reasons. But nevertheless, it was something we had to willingly agree or not sell the home and stay there. But our desire was to walk away from that home so that we could go and do some, you know, things for the family. So don't tell me when government comes along and says, we've decided to displace you, that that's the same thing. It's not. It is not. Even if, circumstances came up a year later and said, oh, well, I now need to leave the state and we need to go here because of family circumstances, what have you. That doesn't play. It can't play because we have to go by the moment when government made the decision to take your home. So the just compensation needs to go through this, I'll just say, a jury review to determine, you know, the value of that home. And so when we talk about the value, we've only talked about the comps and some of the financial values that maybe you've put into it, improvements and those types of things. There are other things to consider. And so we will be right back after these two promos.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so government's taking your property. And let's say there's some intrinsic or there's some other values to your home. Let's say your family grew up there. Let's say you have a family cemetery. They would have to pay for the relocation of your family cemetery and not, so they have to basically pay for it not going into a public cemetery, but to relocate a family cemetery. Because bottom line, if you had 5 acres and on that, you know, 5 acres, you had a little quarter acre where you had a little family cemetery, they would have to cover the costs of exhuming or pulling up all of these graves, gravestones and everything else, and creating that little family cemetery to the same level, if not better. So it has to be either equal or better. It can't be worse. They can't give you a worse deal. Just compensation. And so every little nitinoid involved in, you know, the transaction. Let's just say you have things in your house like we did. We ended up taking many of our light fixtures because we had some light fixtures that were actually signed by the artists because we were a collector of the particular lighting fixtures. And so we took down the chandelier and so forth. And so those types of things, they would have to pay for the moving, the taking down and the installing of that into your new home. In other words, they need to, there should be zero other than your, and in all honesty, whatever time you have to take off to endure this public debt being placed upon you, you should be compensated. You shouldn't have to bear the debt when it comes to property confiscation. Just compensation. So if you have to take time off, those lost wages, not that you got vacation time, lost wages, you need to be compensated. And within your compensation, does your compensation include, you know, your contributions towards your health care, your contributions towards the 401k, your contributions for, so they need to make all the employer contributions because that's all a part of your compensation from work. So when we really look at what is truly just compensation, I'm telling you what, the government is getting away with murder when they take away your property and just throw some money at you. And sometimes they'll just kind of inflate that, but they don't cover the costs of everything. And as far as I'm concerned, I think the personal stress, they need to have somebody that handles and works with you almost like a concierge to ensure that that transaction, the transition of you being put out of your home because government told you had to go. And, you know, just imagine, you know, think back in some of the times you've heard of people that have, because of eminent domain, it's people that are along the freeway or what have you. Every once in a while, government, you know, gets it in their craw that that's a pretty nice piece of property they want to take from you. And they're going to, you know, flex their muscles and do it. And they actually stiff the persons that they do. You know, they may throw some money at them that seems like an elaborate amount of money, but I'm telling you, it's probably not an elaborate amount of money. Have you ever heard of a $1 million view? Have you ever heard of a property that has a $1 million view? Well, if you look at view properties, how many are there? How many view properties are there, and what is the actual value of that view that you're now taking from that person? If you can't give them the compensation for that view, folks, I'm just trying to prove a point that when we look at the just compensation, we allow ourselves to marginalize, but remember, just means that it is equal or better. It can't be worse. They can't just throw you into some, you know, dilapidated part of town, you know, where you hear gunshots at night, where they've moved you out of a really nice place. Or when they move you out of a bad place and they put you in a nice place, okay, well, then you benefit, right? Equal or better, but they can't make it worse. And so when we look at these fundamental rights and property rights and so forth, we, again, this is not you selling property. This is government taking your property from you. So if that's the case, then how did we get to the point? How did we cross this line in our government and in our world, in our paradigm today in this republic, that they can just take your stuff, whether that be cars or what have you? Where? Now, so the 14th Amendment, remember, privileges and immunities, right? If you have privileges and or immunities and this compensation, the 5th Amendment applies to you, my friends. That means your state and city and, you know, local county or whomever, they can't do this asset forfeiture, this property confiscation. They can't. Not without just compensation. So we've been bamboozled because we see this happen all the time where they'll take vehicles. They'll take, you know, oh, well, you committed, you know, that was a part of the commission of the crime. any property you use, like your vehicle for, you know, for speeding. If you have, you know, just a reckless, I mean, there are cases, folks, where they'll just take your property because, oh, well, you that was a drunk driving. Even though you didn't do any damage, they take your car from you. Or, you know, they take your boat. They take your property in any form and it just disappears. Then there needs to be, and as far as I'm concerned, it's not just unless a jury of your peers actually comes in and on your behalf, the state now has to prove that they have provided justice. Remember, we have a right to a jury of our peers. And so when it comes down to justice, we have a right to justice as well. And so when it says just compensation, I believe there needs to be a jury there. It cannot be a bureaucrat or somebody in government that says, yes, that's enough. Because they'll always, always marginalize what is enough for you. Because what's enough for you is a lot different than what's enough for them. And that's why we have rights of protection. So, anyway, as you know, this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And here I am in the third segment already. Now, we were covering, and again, the reason we're covering the Bill of Rights one more time, and we're going through this more at a high level than I am going through all the petitions and all the different details of the issues. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to show to you, and so this is where going to the color-coded Constitution, and you'll find it on reclaimingtherepublic.org on the podcast page where my daily shows are posted for this current year. Now, we have a archive podcast page if you want to listen to, and if you're new to the show, and you want to actually hear more details on the Constitution, I would suggest going to the 2022 archive page of our podcast. Go to the podcast archives and go to 2022 and go to September, I think it's 20th, 19th or 20th, where we started covering the Constitution. And we actually have a little kind of a synopsis, really high-level synopsis, Article 1, Article 1, Article 1. And so as we go through this, we actually identify, we read the Constitution and identify those parts being violated. Now, there's points in time when I'm talking and I'm reading, and I even though it's highlighted in red, sometimes I forget to say, by the way, folks, this is egregiously being violated. But we do try to talk and place context to it. And what we do have is we have petitions that we've identified. And that's what it's all about. When we talk about this overall strategy, and we talked yesterday about the premises, using the three premises that, you know, reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree, that knowledge is power, and that that political power flows from the people. Then putting those things together and helping you understand these concepts that created the Bill of Rights, the concepts that created our constitutional republic, are so important for us to understand. It helps us when we start moving forward and when we start definitizing the Constitution. We all should be able to challenge interpretations that are unconstitutional, that actually conflict with the definitions and terms that the framers had given us during the ratification debates, which sends me right back to how important it is that we definitize the Constitution. We can no longer let somebody in some ivory tower say, well, I think it means this. It's some grand noble gesture of granting somebody some form of social justice. I'm sorry. Government was never intended to administer justice at a social level. It was to administer a very limited and defined government and establish very specific laws and The laws, well, we'll get into all of that when we come back. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the laws. These laws, as well as the enumerations, the roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties, the enumerations within our Constitution are what establishes jurisdiction. Now, in the U.S. Constitution, there are only four laws, only four, that has been delegated to the federal government as far as criminal type of laws, where they have the, you know, the jurisdiction and the ability to dictate punishment and so forth. Those laws being counterfeiting, the counterfeiting of currency, the committing of treason, the committing of high crimes and misdemeanors on the high seas, or crimes and misdemeanors, felonies to misdemeanors, whatever. And this is all in Article 1, Section 8. And the other one is laws or violations of laws committed against the laws of nations. In other words, when you're traveling abroad and you commit a crime that is considered a law of nature, not nature, a law that is a national law in the country that you are visiting as a U.S. citizen, the United States declares jurisdiction over all U.S. citizens against the laws of nations. In other words, if they want to charge you with a crime as a U.S. citizen, they have protected you as a U.S. citizen against crime. Now, many people in the sovereign citizen movement said, oh, they did not create U.S. citizens and this, you know, this overreaching arch that the U.S. citizens concept. Absolutely, they did. They did it very specifically to protect us from other nations coming along and impressing us and basically taking us. I mean, what's to keep a nation from coming and capturing, kidnapping, whatever you want to call it, and hauling us away? Where, you know, okay, now that they're out in international water, they've got us? No, the United States has jurisdiction to protect our lives and our property, but while we're traveling abroad, they also have jurisdiction over any accused crimes that we're accused of. Okay, so that's it. So in other words, the jurisdiction as determined by the framers, it all has to be enumerated. So crime itself, the federal government has that jurisdiction over those crimes. Now, near as I can tell, until the prohibition, there weren't any other crimes that the federal government was delegated over as far as crimes go. Now, when it comes to the prohibition, that was repealed. So the agency that they created unconstitutionally, because if you read the prohibition, it talks about the federal government having the jurisdiction and restricting and limiting that, but it never granted them the power to actually create an enforcement agency. It still relied upon Article 1, Section 8, or at least in the amendment itself, they did not include to grant or delegate to the federal government the ability to create its own enforcement. The design in the Constitution was the enforcement of laws shall be done by the militia. In other words, when they create this law, and so prove me wrong. Prove me that it gives them the ability and actually takes away the necessity of a militia to have to enforce the laws. See, there was a symbiotic relationship in the writing of the Constitution upon the states, that the states would actually abide by the laws, that the federal government didn't have to, you know, say, we don't trust you. The federal government couldn't just come along and say, you know, we're going to do this ourselves. No, they were constrained from that because this goes into the concept of the standing armies. When they talk about standing armies has nothing to do with the military force. A standing army was an army that the king kept at home that would be able to enforce whatever arbitrary law the king wanted to enforce, or the forces that he delegated out to the sheriffs. And there's all sorts of really good stories that talk about the use of standing armies and Robin Hood and Sherwood Forest and I forget the sheriff and, you know, his soldiers that actually enforce the laws of the king or of the sheriff. In those days, and this takes me back down this other concept, folks, that when we look at the monarchy establishment of how government is created, this concept of magistrates is integral in a monarchy. That the monarch actually vests into one a representative for him down at this county, which was a count in those days, and they had a sheriff. And the sheriff eventually became the chief magistrate underneath a monarchy. But he was not a magistrate of the people. He was a magistrate for the king to ensure that he captured and obtained the taxation for the king and enforced the laws of the king. In other words, the sheriff wasn't our guy. The sheriff was actually a guy in the king's pocket. It was considered a noble position of the king. That the king decided, oh, I am going to bestow upon you this honor and position to be able to judge and oversee and magistrate, be the magistrate for the people of this county. So that all got blown away when we declared our independence and started to establish our republican form of government. And under the Constitution, we evolved and evolved and evolved and left all of these laws and this structure behind. We progressed and we never looked back legally as a nation as we moved forward. Now, Britain wasn't happy with this. Britain wanted to take us back. And as a matter of fact, we have history, you know, decades and decades of Britain being trying to get involved, having spies in America. and Britain constantly trying to get America back under their thumb. Ah, and they seized the moment after the Civil War, because when America was its most vulnerable, when America was finally at a point where it had, you know, suffered so severely to where it would just did not want to fight again, the people that were co-opted by the British spies and these underlings of the crown, they basically said, you know, we'd rather be red than dead. And they violated the Constitution. And everybody thought that this was all legitimate, because these people had the power. Even Britain really believed that what they did was legitimate here in America. And this goes to show, when I talk to people about this is really important, and I know we're going to wrap up on this. When we look at Blackstone's commentaries on the law, we look at Bastiat and the law, and we look at Vattel, we look at all of these different people that talk about the law, Montesquieu, and the laws of nations, they spoke in context to the law and structure of their paradigm. Their, you know, Bastiat was French, Blackstone was English. None of these men that wrote these great commentaries, they're very insightful, great commentaries on the law, did not understand the U.S. Constitution as it was evolving. And they didn't understand, because there was no man that just sat down and did this. It was all done by divine inspiration that was coming from multiple men, and how they kind of put it together. I would say there's probably two men that understood the Constitution better than anybody else. And one of them, you know, which is James Madison. The other one is one that I think was completely obscured by history, that did not get his credit. He was one that was involved in the signing of the Articles of Association. He was involved in the Articles of Confederation. I believe he was even involved in the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, as well as the Bill of Rights. And his name's Roger Sherman. And so Roger Sherman understood, because he was involved in the evolutionary process of this nation as we completely cut away and lifted out the cutout. You know, like when you cut something out of, you know, the cookie dough, and you lift that up and you actually bake that separately, because it is no longer a part of that dough anymore. And we have actually broke away and created a completely different paradigm. And so Britain doesn't understand that we have an enumerated constitution, that the only way things can be done legitimately, such as the Organic Act, such as creating corporations, those powers must be delegated, which is what we went into the very last break on jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is limited and defined by those few delegated roles, responsibilities, powers, and property. That's it, folks. If it's not enumerated, they can't do it. So, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.